Welcome, friends, to the Friends That Carry On podcast, where we dive deeper in our trips, unpack tips, and everything in between. The one who holds the torch key is your host. Get ready for your ears to go on a trip with your favorite group of friends.
All right. Welcome to Friends That Carry On, our regular podcast. We are a group of friends who like to travel together, and we like to share our adventures. You can find us at friendsatcarryon.com and on Facebook and Instagram at Friends That Carry On. This week, we have four of our friends. I'm going to be moderating today, and my name is Jim Scott, and we've got
Eric Fargo
and Tony Price,
Walt Palmer.
All right, welcome, guys. Today, we are going to be talking and doing a little tour through the state of West Virginia. We're going to take you through five or six areas of the state and talk about little offshoots you can do in those areas of the state. Before we get into that in this beautiful state, Tony, do you have our affiliate for the week?
Yeah, Park and Fly. For everybody who jumps to the airports, I mean, we know that a lot of the airports aren't real great as far as some of the parking, especially like Washington Dulles. But there's a lot of private parking places that are kind of popping up, and Park and Fly is one of those. They have one here at National and also at BWI. But again, check out their website. You can go log on, and they have all the airports you can basically plug in, when you're going to fly, when you're leaving, what time you're arriving, and what destination, you know, airport you're in, and they'll tell you where to go and give you the price. So then you can just kind of compare it up front. So it's a great idea to save a few bucks if you're going on a long trip. So Park and Fly.
Great. Very good. Well, thank you for that. Like I said, we are going to be talking about wild, wonderful West Virginia. As many of, if you're a podcast listener of us, you know we hail from West Virginia. We are located in the most eastern part of it, the eastern panhandle in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, about an hour outside of D.C. and Baltimore. To give you an idea of West Virginia, it's a rural, mountainous state. Has about 1.8 million folks in it, but you can go for miles and hardly see a house or anything else when you get out into the state itself. In our area, though, we do have two mountains. We're in the what's called the Shenandoah Valley, between the Blue Ridge Mountains and the Allegheny Mountains. So we have mountains in our area, but for the most part, we're kind of flat here in the valley, whereas once you get out past the Allegheny Mountains to our west, it gets really a lot of ravines, a lot of craggy, and yes, very, very mountainous. So it makes it, it does make it a rural state, full of natural resources, timber, coal, natural gas, but it's just a good place to go, and it's a beautiful area to visit and so forth. The state, it's an odd shaped state. We kind of make fun of it. If you can picture giving somebody the bird, and if you give the bird and flip it backwards and have your thumb out to your right, your middle finger at the top is Wheeling, which is near Pittsburgh. You're in the northern panhandle, and the thumb out to the right is the eastern panhandle where we're at, and we're at the very tip of that. And if you go just beyond that border is where you'll find D.C. and Baltimore. If you go 10 minutes one direction, you're in Maryland. You go 15, 20 minutes the other direction, you're in Virginia. And we're about an hour and 20 minutes from Washington, D.C. So, and then the rest of the state is surrounded a good bit. We've got not only Maryland, Virginia, you got Pennsylvania, Ohio, Kentucky.
Virginia.
And Virginia, which I already mentioned. So we're surrounded by a number of states. And then in our area, and this sort of pertains, I guess, to the rest of the state too. And this is more for industry, but also for tourism, travelism. For anybody that's listening to this, we are within 8 hours of half of the United States population. So half the population of the United States can get to West Virginia within at least an 8-hour drive. In most cases, it's shorter than that. So that's just an interesting little tidbit there. For our listeners who would want, after listening to this, want to go to different parts of the state, if you want to come to the eastern part, you can fly into, other than obviously driving in, like we said, it's only an 8-hour or less than an 8-hour drive, depending on where you're at. You can fly into Washington or Baltimore airports. If you want to head into the northern or north central part, you've got Pittsburgh you can easily fly into and trek right down. On the western side, you can either fly into Charleston itself or Columbus, Ohio is about an hour, 2-hour drive, depending on what part of West Virginia you're going to. So it's actually an easy state to access if you want to come here. So In an earlier podcast, we talked about our area, which is a beautiful area, a lot of Civil War history, American Revolutionary history, and with our proximity to D.C., there's a lot going on here. But since we've already talked about that, we're going to sort of head out from our area in the Eastern Panhandle and take a tour of the state. So heading from our area in the most eastern part, we're going to head out through a direction called Corridor H. And it sort of leaves where we're at in the Eastern Panhandle and heads into the middle of the state. Some of the places you're going to hit as you go along. First place that's of note is Mount Storm. After you pass Moorefield and a few places, this is mainly a big power plant with a big lake. So if you like fishing and that type of stuff, it's a place to go. Next from there, and I know one of our friends, Walt Palmer, has some land up in Davis, West Virginia. But you come in there off the new, and Corridor H keeps expanding through the state. So it's sort of opening up this middle part of the state. So it's kind of odd. You got this 4-lane highway and there's pretty much nothing around, but it does provide access.
Eric and I always tease it. It's literally the Audubon. We were teasing they should open it up because there's not a whole lot of traffic on it. And it's some of the most beautiful scenery you'll see.
It's gorgeous.
If you can imagine a mountain estate and to put in that much miles of road, the bridges are fantastic.
It's a very well-built road, and you can go very fast on it.
Well, that area, too, speaking of Mount Storm, but that's where we're talking about Davis and everything. There's one to shut down, but there's a ski resort through there, Canaan.
Right.
So that's actually pretty popular with the whole Washington, D.C. and Northern Virginia crowd because once you go down the highway, you're 2 hours, hour and a half to get there. So
with Corridor H, you are probably from Washington, D.C., maybe in the three-hour neighborhood.
Right.
Yeah. Which there's some great Blackwater Falls work, right?
Right. Well, yeah, and Blackwater Falls is right there in Davis where Walt has some property, and it's one of the most gorgeous waterfalls you'll see anywhere. And there's trails there.
A lot of hiking.
Yeah. A lot of hiking.
Mountain biking.
In the wintertime, there at Blackwater Falls, they have, I think it's one of the longest sled riding lifts there. Mm-hmm. So you can sled ride, and then it has a lift to take you back up to the top.
A couple little tidbits of information. Dolly Sods is the highest plateau on the East Coast, and that is in West Virginia, and that is right outside of Davis, correct?
If
you've never been up there, you can drive up there right to the plateau and just look across, and it's pretty spectacular. And the reason I bring this up is because we are in October, and it is probably the most beautiful time of the year, and it is absolutely the most beautiful time of the year to travel our state.
Right, absolutely.
And that's the reason we bring it up now.
In the next few weeks, the leaves are going to be changing, and tons of travelers or visitors or even people living in the state will just hop in the car and travel some of these by roads and roads out through the state.
So I would say that's kind of like really we talk about some of the kind of these must-sees. You know, it's a big state, right? Some of the must-sees they're kind of hopping around from different parts, but and kind of in that one mid the southern east part of the state, that whole Davis and the Dolly Sods, because like Eric, you were saying that plateau. That vegetation, the only other place you'll find that is actually Canada.
You know what's amazing? I've been up there, and I've never been to Patagonia, but I've seen Patagonia, and I'm that reminds me of Dolly Sods. So it kind of gives me an idea of what Patagonia might be like.
It is kind of bizarre, though. That's kind of like, I think, in that area, that whole Davis.
Anybody can Google it out there. I don't know what its height is. It might be between 3,000 and 4,000 foot plateau.
You get Dolly Sods, and then you get to Spruce Knob, which is one of the highest points there. Mm-hmm. It's also in that general region out there, so it's pretty cool. So this whole area is kind of the Corridor H. It's sort of mid-eastern West Virginia, I'd say, as we're trying to keep this in a locale. But there's a lot of stuff to do out there. I mean, you from Canaan, if you drop down Route 32 and then 33, you're going to come at Seneca Rocks, which is a beautiful rock structure. It's where sort of a slab of rock just comes up out of the ground, and it's just like a sheer, if you can picture a piece of shale or some flat stone that you would put down for your walkway, just hold it up on its end, it's just got this jagged edge at the top, and it's really neat. So it as you're coming through that mountain pass, you look at it, it just pops up there. You can hike up to the top of it, But at the bottom of it is the South Branch of the Potomac River. Mm-hmm. And there's great trout fishing from there all the way through Petersburg and all. And
they have zip lining now out there, I think, all kinds of activities.
It's one of the largest, national forests, Monongahela.
Right.
I mean, that's huge property.
Yeah. And you could be up there driving around and not even see people.
Oh, yeah.
And seriously, cool.
If you like to camp and even if you want to kind of glamp, there's areas where you can camp there where you don't see light.
Yeah.
You won't see a car. You won't see anything. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a cool place to go.
So, exactly. Along those lines, up through there is the Smokable Caverns and then Smokable Caverns Mountains. And it sort of is on the Petersburg side, which is Grant County, and then over across into Pendleton County. So, same thing. You've got a lot of mountainous area. There's a lot of cabins. You can rent cabins that are right off the road and are nicely furnished and all that, but you can also really go out there and find a little campsite or just pitch a tent or whatever the case might be. That area is also really known for trout fishing. So you can fly fish, regular trout fish, but there's a fish hatchery in Petersburg, and that's where they developed the golden trout.
Mm.
So the golden trout was actually founded in Petersburg, West Virginia, which is pretty cool.
I did not know that.
Now,
education today.
Something my wife found out the hard way is through there. And there, if you read your license, it's a catch and release area. There aren't a bunch of signs or whatever. And we used to have, when we had the shredding business, we had trucks that ran out through there. And when you came down to Seneca Rocks, it's got a little tourist area. You can drive down behind there, and then the river goes right there. And right there, there's a little wet river bridge that you can go over when the water's low. It's a great place to fish. I've caught a ton of trout there, but you're not allowed to use live lure or live bait. You have to use lures and no barbed hooks. Well, she's there, and traditionally just uses worms and stops somewhere. She took her fishing pole. She knew she was going through there that day, and she was fishing. And the game warden came up, and she had just caught a fish. And so she kind of innocently, he's like, what kind of bait are you using? Well, I'm using worms. She was all proud of herself. Well, he was brand new, and he felt that he needed to give her a citation.
Wow.
It was a $200 citation for using worms. I mean, she released the fish. She wasn't keeping the fish, but because she used worms, and this guy, he was so new, he had to call him, what do I do? You know, he was like, deer in headlights, but she paid the price for his name. All because of a worm. So
damn worms.
But it is a great fishing hole. If you're through there, you can just stop off, go throw your line in, and I mean, in 20 minutes, I'd catch 5 or 6, 7 trout. Bam, 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 bam. So
no live bait though.
I use live bait, but I didn't get caught.
Well, you just did.
Yeah.
You just announced to the world.
So anyhow, so Seneca Rocks is sort of at a crossroads with Route 28 and Route 33. And if you head west from there through this part of the state and drive out another, I don't know, half hour, 45 minutes, you're going to come into another little area that there are several touristy type things. First, you're going to go through the town of Greenbank. And if any of our listeners are astronomers, you've probably heard of the Greenbank Observatory. And they've got these, huge satellites there. And it's one of the most renowned places for studying astrology and
The celestials.
And because of that, and one of the reasons it's in rural West Virginia is they want
no light pollution.
Well, there's no light pollution, but they don't want any cell service. They don't want anything cutting out. So there is no cell service in this area.
Because they're radio towers.
Right. They're radio towers. So, and they've made some great discoveries there. And I don't have those statistics on me. But you have no cell service there. So in this day and age, when you expect to be able to get a hold of stuff or your GPS, you better lock in where you're going beforehand so you know how to get through there. And the reason I say that is just beyond Greenbank, you're coming up on Snowshoe Mountain.
You could call it Area 52.
maybe today we will. As you're leaving there, you're going to come up and you're heading, most people in that area are heading to Snowshoe Mountain, which is some of the best skiing in the East Coast, and that far south as well.
And golfing too, by the way.
And golfing. And they got golfing and they've got plans to add water parks that's coming in the next 2 years. So, I mean, it's going to be it's already a nice year-round resort. And when you get there, the village up top there is beautiful. Lots of restaurants, lots of condos, lots of places to stay. So it is a very good place to go. It takes a little while to get there, and you're out in the middle of nowhere. But once you get there, it's well worth it. But up till you get to the top of that mountain and into the village, they have worked out a deal with AT&T to have service right in the village, but you don't have cell service because of Green Bank before there. So just be prepared for that as you're traveling out there. But once you get there, it is well worth the visit, whether it's wintertime and you're going skiing for some of the best skiing around. I'm not a skier, so I can't speak to that, but that's what I hear. And I was there just this summer, and the hiking and the lake and the ponds, and they had a big archery event going there, world bow hunting archery thing. So they've got all kinds of festivals and events going there. And like I said, we were talking to some of the people on the board, and they're putting in a water park here in the next year or two. Wow. So it's going to be year-round events to go to there. And between, and I left this out, between Green Bank and Snowshoe is also Cass Railroad, which is one of those neat little things out in the middle of nowhere. It's an old steam engine rail line. So you can, an old coal railroad type thing. So you can go there and ride a steam engine, and it'll take you up the mountain and sort of relive the old railroad days.
So, loudly.
Exactly.
Kids love it.
Yeah.
So anyhow, that's sort of the middle part, or Corridor H, and into the middle of the state. There's a lot to do there. One of the things that's kind of neat about the state and all is a lot of people, this area was settled by Germans. And a lot of the reason was it reminded them of Germany and the mountains and the Rhine Valley and so forth. So it's a beautiful country. And in this area that's a little bit deeper and a little further into the mountains, it definitely reaffirms its beauty.
Mm-hmm.
So as we continue our road trip through West Virginia, we're going to go from the middle now, sort of the middle, and kind of turn back southeasterly. And we're going to head down towards Greenbrier County and White Sulphur Springs. And this is probably not only a resort that's a jewel of West Virginia, but it's one of the leading resorts, if not on just the East Coast, all of America. Mm-hmm. And that's the Greenbrier. I think all of us have been there at one point or another. And this is just one of those luxurious resorts. It's been around since the 1800s. People used to flock there from the cities by railroad to go to the Sulphur Spring spas and so forth. And I'm not sure, because you also, and this is just over the line in Virginia, you got the Homestead. Mm-hmm. I guess there were a lot of people back in the 1800s heading out there, because it's a hike there now on Interstate 64, which is a nice highway, and 81 if you're coming from Virginia. But I can't imagine horse and buggy and,
or a railroad,
and even railroad going over those mountains to get there. But these are huge, luxurious resorts out in the middle of the mountain. So obviously they saw the appeal and the beauty, which is incredible. But and then so from the 1800s, eventually the railroad did buy it and ran it for a long time. And probably the Greenbrier's big claim to fame, which was one of those secrets, but not all that secret until recently, when I guess it was declassified. Back during the Cold War and the nuclear age, and I guess this goes back to the 50s, if I'm not mistaken, but in case of a nuclear attack on D.C. by the Russians, the Capitol or Congress needed a place to go. So they built an underground bunker that totally, on the inside, resembles the Capitol, so they can do legislation and all that, all the seats and all that type of stuff, and then had supplies and rooms or...
Even medical, surgery, all kinds of things in there.
Had everything in there to keep Congress going in the case of a nuclear war. So it's so just
you can tour that now.
Yeah, you can tour.
You can tour the bunkers
now.
That's
really cool. So
it is.
So cool. It is. It's a really neat place. But then for a few years, it fell into disrepair. The railroad wasn't really taking care of it, and it looked like the Greenbrier was sort of going to go by the way of you know, the dodo bird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then our current, sometimes beloved, other people say not so beloved, Governor Jim Justice, who is a billionaire and the richest man in the state, came in and bought the property. Now, he is from Greenbrier County, has made his money in farming and coal and who knows what else. And like him or not like him, he is a big vision person. Mm-hmm. So he came in, bought the property, and has restored it to immaculate condition.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
I mean, we go there.
Remember the fact that it was still a PGA Tour stop?
Yeah, he brought the PGA there, which put it on the map. There's, yeah, there's.
I can pretty much guarantee that's the first time that Bon Jovi ever played in the state of West
Virginia. Yeah, right. Let alone in the mountains, right.
There's people that have found out where, you know, the Greenbrier is over the last probably 8 years.
Oh, yeah.
Never knew it existed because of that.
I remember driving in there for the first time. What a spectacular drive. And again, this time of year, the time of year I was there was summer, May. So it was very green. It was gorgeous, luscious. But now I can imagine.
But you did.
It's a beautiful drive.
Being the Greenbrier, it's not just a gorgeous mansion. The things you can do there, which you've done with several of them, they have the off-road courses where they were doing Land Rovers. I think they're doing Jeeps now.
They were doing Jeeps at the time Jeeps. I was there.
You
I was
do able, falconry.
Yeah, falconry was. I saw it on the list of things to do. So they have over 100 different activities you can partake in.
They have,
on this property,
the,
right?
I got to do the falconry, which was right. Neat. I mean, they had the bird and show.
Isn't that cool?
To do and how it goes after things, how it hunts.
Very educational. Very you don't educational. Know. Did you let it sit on your arm?
I didn't, but others did. In the
but group. You realize you don't. These birds are huge. Their wingspan is 4 or 5 feet. Pounds. They don't weigh but 2 or 3 pounds. Yeah. So you're expecting you're feeding it, and you're expecting it to fly, and you're expecting it to be heavy, and all of a sudden. It's on there and you don't even feel it. You're like, holy cow. Just very educational. I didn't even know it was available. And I thought, I really want to do that because I don't even know what it is. Right. So falconry, just teaching really you about cool. Birds of prey.
Tony mentioned the off-road. So you got Jeeps and all. They also, you can, it's a three-wheel vehicle now where it's two in the front, one in the back. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're called Vipers that are sort of like convertibles. They're sort of like a Batmobile. And you can rent those and just take them out on the highway, all just through the back roads and all there, which is really neat. They have a movie theater in there. Obviously, a first-class spa, so you can get let your back rows massage. You have an indoor
steakhouse, pool. Too, there.
They got Jerry West's Steakhouse.
They have a casino.
They got the casino that they put in.
They have a very good restaurant.
The casino is, when you come in the front, it's sort of an iconic scene for the Greenbrier. And so if you've seen postcards, whatever, the front of it, it's, you know, over 700 room hotel. And right now it's all flowers in that front thing, big garden. Well, that's where the casino is. They dug that whole front yard up and sunk the casino down in there.
Mm. And take a jacket. The only casino in the country that requires you to wear a jacket.
But not a heavy coat.
A dinner jacket.
Absolutely. So they're very formal. It's still decorated, and there's a famous designer, Dorothy, not Lamour, but I mean, it's kind of a wild, a lot of colors, a lot of crazy colors, but apparently she was very famous in the 30s and 40s, and they've kept that design going.
It's a floral design.
Mm. Yes, very floral. Very, very floral and very colorful.
Jim, did you do the four-wheeling?
I have not done the four-wheeling.
Just FYI, the four-wheeling is not fast because the terrain is super, super rocky and bumpy, and there's no going fast. It is slow climbing and slow going. So it's not all out gas, pedal to the floor four-wheeling. It is slow mountain climbing four-wheeling. Just, you know, big tires, 29-inch tires.
Are there 4 or 5 golf courses there now on property?
There are, I guess technically it's 4. There's 3 on the property, and then you've got what's called the Sporting Club, which it runs alongside the other golf courses, but it's sort of a private club. But if you know people, you can play out of that too. That's the Sporting Club, Nick Faldo, Bubba Watson, all them are private members there, and they have houses down there. So, I mean, this has become a really elite community. And I guess the roots to the golf there, and they had golf before, but the big player was Sam Snead from back in the early golf days. That's where he grew up. And that was his
he was the course. Pro.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, and Walt and I got the pleasure. The Old Whites is the PGA course that they use, and it's the famous course that's been there. And we got the pleasure to go. Of course, you need to have a caddy to play that. So we had a caddy. His name was Grover, and he was great.
What a great experience. We played golf with Grover. We played maybe mid, late April.
Mm.
And later on that evening, we went down to Lewisburg, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But we were like maybe 4 of 10 people that were on the golf course that day.
Because
it was early April and they really prepared it. At the time, they prepared it for the July PGA tournament. Now it's been moved back a little bit. but it was pristine. Mm. And we were maybe 4 of 10 people playing it that day.
You didn't want to take any divots, did you?
a beautiful golf course. And you're thinking West Virginia, of course, you're thinking mountain courses, but the old white course is kind of down in the valley. Yeah. It's flat.
But pretty open.
It's an old style golf course. So yes and no, you know, but it's a beautiful, the golf courses we played there were fantastic. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Absolutely beautiful. Yeah. River was great as a caddy. Tell us a little story. Well, tell us how to play the holes and depending on what side you're on, the ball's going to roll this way because of the mountain slope and stuff, because it doesn't necessarily seem like you're on a slope, but it's still got that slight angle.
Right. Yeah.
So he was able to guide us. It didn't help my game, but
it was a treat. It was a treat.
It was a treat. But
have you ever played for the caddy before, Jim?
Not that I can think of.
I know, right? Not many people get an opportunity to even do that.
Yeah. So he also had. He's been around for a long time and had some stories about Sam Snead. Apparently, old Stanley wasn't the nicest person around.
so we would.
And like to gamble.
So this is hearsay from Rover, right, the caddy. But what Sam would do is he would be at the club later on in life, and he would drive around, and he would happen upon your foursome, you know, and he would say hi and da da da, and you'd get back to the clubhouse, and there'd be like $100. Pro charge.
He might give you a tip. Say, you need to do this back in your ball.
And you'd be charged for it.
He'd go back and charge you for a lesson.
A guy's got to make a living.
Old Sam Snead had to make a living, didn't he?
This is from Grover. But, I mean, stories like, this guy was, he was born and raised in that area. Mm. So, like, he knew the history of not only the golf course, but the property. It was really 4 hours of
education.
Yeah, right. And we both thoroughly enjoyed it.
Right.
So,
and
those are the kind of fun events, though, that things that happen, like your side stories when you're traveling.
It's just amazing. Yeah.
Exactly. Now, a year or two after Walt and I got to play that area, the floods of 2016 devastated White Sulphur Springs and that course. They got like 9 inches of rain within an hour. And with the slopes of the mountains there all coming down there, I mean, it just tore the whole town and that golf course apart.
Washed it out.
And they spent millions getting that course back so they could play. They had to skip the tournament.
They
the
canceled PGA that
tournament
year.
That year. But, I mean, it wiped out the town. And Walt and I were fortunate enough to go back there with a group of Rotarians. And there were pictures when the flood happened of a house that actually broke off its foundation, caught fire and was floating away in the flooded rivers down there.
Burning
while it was floating down and going down there. And people were on roofs and getting rescued, and the people did die as well. And we were fortunate enough to go down and sort of lend a hand a little bit in the rebuild of it. And one of the houses we worked on was the house that replaced the house that got floated down on. Got to meet the people that owned it and all that.
It was a neat experience.
And then Walt framed out another house down there. So it was kind of rewarding to be able to go back and lend a hand there as well. And now you can never say somebody's fully recovered, but when you go down there now, you don't see the scars and the effect that flood had, which was in 16.
They brought it back pretty quickly. Yeah. They really did. You could tell they worked hard on it and put a lot of time and effort and elbow grease.
And obviously Jim Justice, that's his property, but he also spent a lot of money in the community helping everything.
Yeah.
So to his credit, a lot of people don't like him for political reasons, but he loves his community and did a lot there. So anyhow, so that's sort of the Greenbrier. Like I said, it's a shining star in the state. Walt had mentioned Lewisburg is you get back out on 64 and start heading west towards Charleston. Lewisburg is another neat little town about 10 miles from the White Sulphur Springs and the Greenbrier. Kind of reminds me a lot of Shepherdstown, our hometown. Right. It's an older town, got a lot of artists, and it's actually got a medical college there. But it's got a lot of neat restaurants. It's got a neat vibe to it. So if you're ever through there, I don't know if y'all have any specific stories to share about Lewisburg, but it's a really good little town to stop off, catch a nice meal. And whether you're going to the Greenbrier or just going there, the West Virginia State Fair is held there every summer.
Well, I would say for those of you who watch HGTV, the Barnwell Builders guys are from that area too.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So they rebuilt cabins from all over country, actually.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. But yeah, they kind of got their start in that area. Also, Smooth Amber.
I was going to say that's from there too.
We're obviously bourbon and whiskey fans, and Smooth Amber, it has their distillery in that location. about 15 minutes from
just outside of Lewisburg.
So you get through there, and you like whiskey. That's a spectacular place to stop. But that's another great area.
Distill it there.
They do more of a blend, but they do a fantastic job. They got some great stuff.
Right. So as we're doing this in sections, we've come from just to recap from the east panel where we started, went through the Quarter H and the central part, and then we moved southeast to the Greenbrier and to Lewisburg. So we're sort of now in the I-64 corridor. So we're going from the east part, moving west. So Lewisburg just off 64, so is White Sulphur Springs. Now we're going to head over to Fayetteville, which is home of the New River Gorge Bridge. This is about an hour from Lewisburg, and the Greenbrier is about an hour drive to Fayetteville. And this is near Beckley, West Virginia, and so forth. So the state is also famous for the New River Gorge Bridge. When we did the quarters, each state had a quarter. The New River Gorge Bridge was featured on the back of it. At the time it was built in the 1970s, it was the largest single-span bridge in the world. It's now dropped to fourth, but still a very spectacular bridge. It's a little over 3,000 feet long. The arch itself is 1,700 feet, and it is 876 feet high, which I think is higher than the Empire State Building, the Eiffel Tower, real close to all those.
So it's up there.
It's very high.
Now, this may be rumor, but when they were, you know, we just had a bridge built not long ago in our area that crossed the Shenandoah River to go into Virginia. And rumor was that they had called the New River Gorge people, whoever ran whatever business of the bridges, had called the engineers that were building this bridge in our area. And they asked them specifically not to build a spectacular, because it's actually higher than the New River Gorge Bridge.
Right. Oh, is it?
Yeah, or the span is longer.
Could have been.
Could have been. Is that what it was? I knew
they redesigned.
So they asked them not to outdo the New River Gorge Bridge and take their
top.
Yeah, and because they feared that they would take their tourism away from them, because they obviously bungee jump off that bridge if nobody, if you're listening out there and you like to bungee jump. Probably one of the best places on the East Coast to bungee. Well, they do all kinds of things there, yeah.
They each October
started out bungee.
Each October, the third Saturday of October, on the New River Gorge Bridge, they have what's called Bridge Day. They started this in 1980.
There.
And about 40,000 people attend. Me and the girls went last year. It's a pretty incredible day. So they build these platforms up on the bridge, and then they've got TV crews and everything else. But if you go on the bridge and look over, you're looking down almost 900 feet into the valley of the New River,
right.
Which is the longest river that is flowing northward. There's only two rivers in the world that flow northward, and it's the second oldest river in the world.
Really?
Next to the Nile.
I didn't know that.
But and there's lots of great whitewater rafting and everything else down there. But anyhow, so if you can picture being on this span bridge, 900 feet up, and then they build a platform that goes up another 20 feet and then out over, so you got nothing under you. I mean, just that, and I'm not a big fan of heights.
You get a little queasy thinking about it?
Just watching other people get up there. But these guys and girls, they get up there, and they're doing base jumping, which is pretty wild. I mean, they're just going off one after another, and then they got parachutes and all that. So you're just – so all day long from whenever it starts at like 8 in the morning – till 3 or 4 in the afternoon, you just got people constantly going off. They got catapults up there. So if you're brave enough, you can sit in the catapult and they'll fling you up on
it. Really? That's great.
Just jumping off of 900 bridges and enough.
It's enough. 50 catapults in front
of it.
Absolutely. Only in West Virginia.
it's quite the spectacle.
Very New Zealand.
For all of our thrill seeking listeners out there, if you want something that's cool, you like the base jump, this is a must do.
It's very New Zealand like.
But it is. It's only one day a year you're allowed to jump.
Right.
Let's be clear.
It's only one day that you go, and you have to have be able to show you're certified. You've done so many jumps and all that. So you can't just, go up there and jump. Right. You have to have whatever the certification
is. It's actually monitored.
Yeah, it is. So now, other things going on there, other than all the vendors that are on the bridge and just the festival atmosphere, the catwalk underneath the bridge, and you can do this year round. You can walk on that catwalk, which I've done a few times, and it's a pretty scary thing because, I mean, there's nothing under you. It's like any catwalk. It's metal. You can see through the floor of the thing you're walking on.
Oh, wow.
And it's only and it's only like 2 feet wide.
Wow. So, it's really a catwalk.
You are strapped in. They do, you know, have a harness on you and a line run up top that they strap you in. But it's, if you're scared of heights, it's tough. My one daughter freaked out and couldn't do it. She had to come back. And a lot of people do that. Yeah. But it's neat. You go over the, and then the guides on it. And of course, they've been doing it. They're cocky. They don't have a strap on it. They'll jump up on the handles. They'll go out on the piers. And you're just like, dude, get back in there. What are you doing? Get back in here.
You're scaring me.
Yes. So it's pretty wild. And it takes, and because it's 3,000 feet long, I mean, it takes forever. And you got the trucks driving over top of you and the whole bridge is shaking. I mean, it's quite the experience.
So it's over half a mile.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little over half a mile.
Yeah. And then they take your time. So if you're thinking you're just going to run through that, you're not. You're out there for a while.
That's cool. That's really cool. I like that.
So you can do that anytime.
Yeah.
But on bridge day, they have a couple of things going on. You got rappellers. So you got all these people that are bringing in, and you have to remember the 2 foot span, and you got to hang over the side while these people that have all this rappelling equipment on them, like they're mountaineers, are walking over to where they've got rappelling lines down off the bridge. And then you see them drop down through a, you know, one of those little doors or whatever those are called, through the floor. And then they're hooking up and they're rappelling down the 800 or 900 feet. So when you eventually go down below and you're looking up, and then all of a sudden you see all these rappellers coming down and the people jumping off, and it's quite a spectacle.
That's got to be a scene from the bottom, right?
Oh yeah, from the bottom.
We need to do that.
I'm a West Virginian and born and raised, and I've never been there. Isn't that terrible? It's a ways from us.
It is. But it's definitely worth it. But the other thing from the base jumpers from the top. Of course, you got the river, and then right over there, there's sort of a landing area, but they've got a big bullseye. So if they can maneuver their chutes, they can hit the bullseye. A lot hit the river, and they got little boats out there to go get them and all that. But so it's pretty cool watching them maneuver, and you walk there, he's not going to make it. And then all of a sudden, they'll do something and sort of scoot right in there. The other thing that they got off of the bridge, and on any bridge, you've got the little pylons out to the side, and they've set up a zip line off there, but you got to walk off the little catwalk onto all over the pylon to get to the zip line
off the top,
so you can zip line. It's right, well, it's from where the catwalk is, so it's just below the bridge. And it goes like this and then down the side. Now you're not going over the river, you're going straight down on that side of it, but it's pretty bad. I did not try that, but
that'd be cool.
So, and they have, I don't know if they have that year round, but I think you can do that at more than just on bridge day. Same people do the catwalk, do that.
Is there a charge for walking underneath the bridge on the catwalk?
Yeah, there is. And they've got a little, like a, sort of like our river riders here, it has all these different things. There's a little guidepost. This is, well, it's not bridge day, that you can pay, and then they do the guiding for it. On bridge day, they got a tent right there and sign you up and then take you over. Sign your releases that you're not going to hold them responsible if you fall off the bridge.
That sounds really neat, though. That sounds like
So the New River Gorge Bridge is a neat place to go. Just visit any time of year, and if you happen to be there the third Saturday in October, it's a cool little place. In Fayetteville, because of the fame of that and their whitewater rafting, now they've got a bunch of cool little restaurants in town. So there are some cool little places to go eat and hang out. Now on bridge day, you can't really get into them unless you're lucky. I just get there at the right time that a seat opens up. But on any other time of year, there are some cool little places to go there. So definitely check them out. While we're still in this area, another thing that's a unique thing that most people haven't heard about and know that's in West Virginia is, and this is right down the road from Fayetteville. In fact, if you're coming in off 64, you're going to pass it going to the New River Bridge, and it's the Bechtel Summit, which is the home of the Boy Scout Jamboree. It's owned by the Boy Scouts of America. It was built in 2013. When they put out a bid for it, places from all over the country bid on it, and West Virginia was able to win it. It's a 14,000-acre plot of land. You got the river that goes down alongside of it. And now it hosts the National Jamboree every year, which brings in 56,000 people each time to it. And it just hosted in 2019 the World Boy Scout Jamboree, which it brought in less people, 40,000 people, but from 152 countries.
That's amazing.
Now, some of the things there, and it's a, and I've got the pleasure of touring it. It's an incredible location, or location, but I mean, just all the facilities there. We got mountain biking, but the X Games can be hosted there, and we're taught, and I don't know if they actually did or they were talking about it, but they got all the ramps and all the stuff for motorbiking and to do the X Games and all. They've got all that kind of infrastructure. They've got zip lining. They've got archery ranges. I mean, just anything you can imagine that, that ties in with that kind of outdoor exercise stuff, it's there. They got the river, they got fishing, they've got a little bit of everything. But that's one of those quiet things a lot of people don't realize is in West Virginia. So it's pretty cool. All right. So that is the I-64 corridor area from White Sulphur Springs over to Fayetteville. We're going to head now and sort of, you'll 64, we'll still be heading on 64, but we're going to curl up a little bit and head to Charleston, which is state capital. I don't know that we'll spend a lot of time here in Charleston, but there's a lot going on there, a lot of manufacturing. Downtown, it's actually, it is our state capital, so you got a beautiful dome and all that along the Kanawha River. Hotels, it's got the Civic Center, so a lot of concerts, a lot of the state sporting events are held there. So there's a lot of reason that, that from around the state, natives have a reason to go to Charleston. The one thing about Charleston, though, it's people are moving out of it. So the city is, population-wise, is getting smaller. So it's very easy to get around, and there's a lot of, when you get down to the downtown area, there are a lot of cool restaurants to go to and so forth. So it's a good place to go and hang out. I'm like I said, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but you can't just skip over the Capitol when we're sort of doing this tour of the state, and we're going to go right by it. But right there in Charleston, Interstate 64 and 77 come together, and 79. So sort of all the main highways head to Charleston. But from Charleston, if you take, which is Corridor G, which goes directly south into the southern part, southern coal fields of West Virginia, when you get to Logan, you come to the trailheads of the Hatfield-McCoy Trail, which has become one of the most popular ATV, dirt bike, regular hiking, mountain bikers, horse riders. All this is there, and it's 700 miles of trails, covers nine counties. I mean, it's an incredible.
And they're building more.
And they're building more. So I know Tony's got a little bit of, knows a little bit about it, but it's an incredible thing. So if you're going
to share. Yeah, well, there's eight major trail systems now. That all, you know, it's all along that, if anybody's familiar with Hatfields and McCoys, the whole Kentucky and West Virginia family battles. But it's basically what's on all of that land, and it is spectacular. And it's turned into a huge, huge thing for tourism state. So, I mean, for people who, you know, we're an outdoor state, you know, so which that's a big thing. I mean, as far as motorbiking and everything, it's a great trail system. So.
ATVs.
Oh, yeah. And they're doing more down there. That's become so popular. Just kind of like, you know, the whole Bridge Day thing. I've heard words. There's some big zip lines, and there's a kind of an adventure park being.
Nice. I'm sure it's all going to really start to develop.
Yeah, kind of like a wolf, you know, the wolf lodge.
Great Wolf Lodge,
something similar to that, because we kind of mimicked after a coal town. This is the word on the street. I don't know.
Nice. Well, I tell you, that area is really depressed. It's truly, their one thing is coal mining. Mm-hmm. And as coal mining has gone down for whatever reason, that area is sort of a depressed area. So perhaps something like this and bringing tourism in is a great thing. And if you're like riding ATVs and your motorbikes and all, I mean, these trails not only are long and winding, but there are some steep and
oh, there's some adventure.
There is. It's not to be taken lightly.
Yeah.
And you better know what you're doing.
Better know what you're doing, and you better have to do it at night without lights. We know. I was hearing a story of someone who's an experienced ATV guy, and they'd been there, and they for whatever reason they went out at night, and he went right over the side of the cliffs and killed him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you gotta.
Yeah, that's what you're doing. But the area is great though, as far as, I mean, you can bring your own. There's several places through there though to get rents,
right?
You know, rentals, because you know, sometimes you don't want to drive,
right?
And bring all that stuff with you. But it's a very cool area to go check out.
Yep, absolutely. So they got Outfitters and all that. So that's kind of an unexplored part of the state, but it's definitely growing with the Hatfield-McCoy Trail. So let's track back up and over. The western side of the state is border with the Ohio River. So as you come up and around that way, you can pop out to Huntington, which is home of Marshall University, and it's near the Kentucky border, and the Ohio River comes through there. You go north a little bit further, you got Parkersburg, which is also another, for West Virginia, a big size town. It's along the Ohio River. And then you keep heading north into the northern panhandle, and you've got Wheeling, which there's a lot going on in Wheeling. It's proximity to Pittsburgh. A lot of cool things there. They've got Ogilvie Park, which is pretty neat. They're downtown. They've done a lot of revitalization there. So there's a lot of cool restaurants downtown to go to. I think they got a good theater system in Wheeling, and a couple of smaller universities, West Liberty, mm-hmm. Bethany, Wheeling Jesuit. So there's a few colleges there. They have a
Farm League hockey
club
in Wheeling. That's actually pretty popular.
Yeah.
The Thrasher? Is that what it is?
I think it is.
It might be.
Because hockey's pretty popular there. And,
I think they were talking about an indoor football team, too, last year.
I forget which organization it feeds. Right. Somebody out there knows. But they had a big draw there in Wheeling. Yeah.
So it's a good little hop in town if you're in that neck of the woods. And,
I'm from Wheeling. That's where I was born.
Is that right?
Of course,
right?
I moved here in 73.
We won't hold that against
you. Yeah, well, I don't know a whole lot about it. I haven't spent much time there.
That's a great thing. Were we all born in West Virginia?
We are.
I was born in Charlestown.
Mm-hmm. I was born
in Inwood.
Yeah.
I was born in Martinsburg and grew up in Shepherdstown.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Born in Wheeling. You mentioned that. Ohio County.
So, but the Wheeling and the Northern Panhandle is near Pittsburgh. So if you're coming from that area or it's easy for you to fly into Pittsburgh, it's a great gateway to, to the northern part of West Virginia.
Yeah. Wheeling suffered the same fate as Pittsburgh did when the steel industry faltered.
Right, yes. It was very steel.
But so they've slowly climbed back. Right. I don't know if they are. They're not what they once were because the steel is gone. The industry's gone. Right. But they're slowly climbing back.
Yeah, but they're revitalized. And they're right there. They're on a tip. They're sort of like us in the East Valley. Got Pittsburgh and Pennsylvania surrounded on one side and Ohio on the other. So right across the
river. And they got their water, too. I mean, any city that's on the water, even if they were heavily industrial, at some point
right.
can revitalize.
Absolutely.
People are attracted to water.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, so, Pittsburgh and Great Rivers.
Yeah. It's huge. The rivers flow right through there. So so that gets us up to the northern part. We're going to drop down and start wrapping up our tour of the state with the north central part of West Virginia. We'll hit the first part of Clarksburg and Bridgeport, which are major little hubs there in the center. If you're going down Interstate 79 and Route 50, which goes over to Parkersburg, it's sort of a little hub there. Just a good little active city there, some coal mines and all, a lot of shopping. Then we pop up to Fairmont, which is just up sort of halfway between Clarksburg, Bridgeport, and Morgantown. Fairmont is one of West Virginia's more famous foods, is the pepperoni roll.
Woohoo!
And it was started in Fairmont. And it was if you don't know what a pepperoni roll is, first of all, you need to go get one and try it, and hopefully it was done well. But if done well, what it was for the coal miners. It was an easy, cheap food to put together where you take bread and bake some pepperoni in it, then when they're have their
lunch
their lunch and their lunch boxes down the coal mine, it was just an easy food.
And that area is obviously heavily
Italian.
Right.
My grandfather was came to Ellis Island and went to New York and didn't like the New York scene, so he migrated to West Virginia and became a coal miner
in Fairmont.
And that's where my dad was born and most of my siblings.
Yeah.
Well, half of them.
So Fairmont's a great little town, great Italian town. One of the good restaurants there is called Muriel's. It's a great Italian restaurant. So,
excellent. Been around many years.
Check that out if you're in the Fairmont area. And then as we wrap up, we're going to pop up to one of the more populous and popular towns in the state, which is Morgantown. The reason that is because it's home to West Virginia University.
Let's go!
So obviously,
how to get that in there?
UW's got lots of great athletics there, or mostly they're great. So just a lot going on. It's a college town. The college itself, like up to 20,000-30,000 students. So it's a thriving little town. With all the research and money being pumped in that city or into the university, it naturally flows out to the city.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was definitely a blue collar town forever, and you can see that in its architecture. But now you've got a lot of cool little restaurants down in the main area on High Street and some things to do. And then there's just outside of town's Cheat Lake, which is a result of damming up the Cheat River, but it's a nice boating and type of stuff out
there. Yeah, there's some great places throughout that area.
Absolutely. Yeah. So anything in, I mean, I kind of skimmed over Morgantown, but there's some other stuff in Morgantown we want to talk about in that area.
Yeah, let's revisit Davis and Thomas.
Okay,
there's
sure.
a great little place called the Purple Fiddle.
The Purple Fiddle may be on people's radar nationally.
Yeah, it if you love bluegrass music, they have some of the best bluegrass musicians over the world. I mean, they come there
to perform.
And it's kind of like a coffee hummus bar with bluegrass.
Yeah, right.
If you get the chance, it's beautiful. And so Davis and Thomas, real quick, are like 2 miles apart.
Right.
And this is in the town of Thomas, mm-hmm. the Purple Fiddle. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Davis is right next door. A lot of quirky little restaurants,
yes.
right. breweries. I just wanted to touch base.
No, it's a good point. That's in the Corridor H section that we were talking about at first. But yeah, it's a great little area
yeah.
for all that.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, are there any other little treasures we may have left out along the way? There are many others. It's just, you know, in our short little podcast, too tough to touch on them all.
But anything I would say, just overall, I mean, we're talking state. I mean, it's obviously known for its natural resources and just some of the. We don't have anything that I would say it's as grandiose, right, as the Rockies or some of the. We don't have a Victoria Falls, but as far as waterways and great little, you know, waterfalls and great little parks. There's a ton of them across the state that
Absolutely.
Are just great visual things. And they are great road trips. And I will say there is a good website. It's one of the state's website on the parks where you can go and they'll give you various road trips to take.
Yeah.
So if you get a chance, depending on how long you want to do
yeah.
it, it's a great little location. You can put a link on our site
Absolutely.
To do that. It's a good spot to
yeah.
check out. Cause they're, if you like road trips, it's great.
Absolutely.
You're not going to get a lot of traffic.
No,
right.
no. Definitely light on traffic,
so.
And they do. And whether it's for hiking trails or ATV trails or the fall foliage, mm-hmm. they have different packages and trips for all that. And,
yeah.
and a lot of the state parks, are beautiful, but they have not only cabins, but they also have lodges and all you can stay
yeah.
in as well.
Exactly.
So, yeah, check that out. All right. Well, that kind of wraps up our tour on West Virginia. We'll post that and get that information out there. One of features we'd like to do on our Friends of Carry On podcast is a little thing on food or food experience. And Eric's going to lead us on that today.
We're going to step away from West Virginia just for my food experience. And we're going to go to Vietnam.
That's close.
It's close.
Darn near the same.
Hey, why Vietnam? Well, I don't know. We were thinking about some of my food experience. Was this my best one overall? No, but it was a great food experience. I took a cruise into Ha Long Bay in Vietnam. Ha Long Bay is northern Vietnam, about 3 hours from Hanoi, and you can usually book the trip through any hotel. They'll gladly book it. You can book a trip from anywhere in the country, even southern Saigon. You can go book a Ha Long Bay trip, but it's just further from Saigon because Saigon's so far south. Ha Long Bay means descending dragon. It is a bay full of about 1,900 individual islands, and they look like they were just plopped down. That's what that means, descending dragon. They think their myth is the dragons came down and plopped these mats of land in the bay to protect Vietnam. So that's why it's called Ha Long Bay. Correct me if I'm wrong out there. I think the cruise was an overnight cruise. We took it out and it was only $150 to take a cruise out, stay overnight and come back. And all your food was paid for. And you had to pay for your drinks and the food was spectacular. I like seafood. I like squid. I like it all. There's no seafood I don't like. So it mainly consisted of seafood. I really enjoy it. So if you get to Vietnam, check out Ha Long Bay and check out the tours that go out into the bay and the overnight tours. It's very affordable and I highly recommend it. It's worth it. They fed us meal after meal. It seemed like once we ate, you went and you had drinks and you're just cruising and you're looking in the bay and it's beautiful and you're meeting people and you're talking. Well, it seems like an hour goes by and you're ready to sit down and eat again. It's like, I'm not really hungry, but I pay for it, so I'll eat. So they didn't skimp you by any means. We even got to, I've never fished for squid. We got to squid fish. And they said whatever we caught, we could eat. And the only person that caught one squid was Jim. Jim Reed's not on the call today. Shout out to you, Jim, you, the one squid you caught. So they shine a floodlight into water. And I guess it attracts the squid. And you just drop the bait down in the water. And you continually drop it and pull it and drop it and pull it and drop it and pull it. And eventually they'll catch it. Well, we did that. I did that for about 5 minutes and I had enough with it. Jim did it and he caught a squid and we didn't get, I don't even know if he ate that one squid that we caught. And it wasn't giant. So it was not a giant squid by any means. Oh, I also learned how to make spring rolls.
Oh, cool.
Now, not egg rolls, spring rolls. There's a difference. Egg rolls are fried. Spring rolls are the rice paper that's soft and usually wrap up shrimp and vegetable and a lettuce. That's a spring roll. So I learned how to make a spring roll and roll a spring roll. So it was a good tour to take and a good food experience. And that's what I had for you today.
Right.
Check out Ha Long Bay in Vietnam.
That sounds wonderful. One more time, our affiliate of the week, Tony.
Oh, you caught me off guard. Park and Fly.
Park and Fly.
Park and Fly, yeah. If you're heading to the airport and you're looking for an alternative place other than the traditional airport parking, check them out. They're at, I think, about 56 locations across the state. So, yeah, Park and Fly.
Fantastic. All right. Well, that wraps up Friends of Carry On this week. Find us at www.friendsofcarryon.com or on Twitter and Facebook at friendsofcarryon.com. Hopefully, we're inspiring you to travel.
Arrivederci.
Be sure to join the friends next week with another great podcast. And don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already. You can also find the friends and other content on www.friendsthatcarryon.com or check us out on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook by searching Friends That Carry On. Thanks again for joining us. And don't forget to carry on, friends.